Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Good morning, or good noontime. 12 o'clock. Here we are with the Storytelling Hour at
EnlightenRadio.org.
Right. I'm Stasi Olkowski, your co-host, and
I'm Fanny Crawford, your other co-host.
There you go. And the music and voice you heard as we came on the air was Andy Offutt Irwin, who graciously allows us to use his original song, Tarry Here, as a lead-in into our show.
Yay, Andy.
Yay. And today, February 4th, congratulations to all you Patriot fans out there, and for all the Patriot haters, who cares? That's a story for another day.
And some of us know absolutely nothing about football and barely know what you're talking about, but I do know that the Super Bowl was yesterday.
Yes.
Not. I don't live in a shoe. Okay.
I'm glad. That might cause a real problem at times.
Our theme today on the Storytelling Hour at EnlightenRadio.org in Bolivar, West Virginia,
yes,
is stories not told by the hero.
Which is a difficult
concept.
To me, it is a difficult concept because telling heroic tales is often done as a narrator and not,
sure,
and not as the hero.
But I think what we're, well, I don't know what you had in mind for that theme.
I think I understand it. It's just that it requires some thought.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to make a person in the story the narrator who normally is not the narrator.
Yes.
Or the hero.
Or the observer.
Right.
Yeah, or so, of some sort. You know. But, you know, all of these themes, like at urban telling venues where you're telling a true story, for example. I once told at Jessica Piscatelli Robinson's venue in, I guess that time it was in Herndon, maybe? But that's not where they usually tell. But the theme was wildlife. Hmm. And there are a dozen ways to interpret that
sure
theme.
Sure. I'm sure that when you were a teenager, that would have fit all of your stories.
Well,
about
I
your
did,
teenage years.
I did tell a teenage year story for
and
that.
I'm kidding.
I know.
So.
Interesting.
Yes.
At least to me.
So, are you going to start us off?
With a story?
Yes.
Well, suppose we start off with Speak Story Series.
Okay, Speak Story Series.
Because there's lots going on this week.
Really big coming up this week. Professional storyteller and Emmy award-winning storyteller and author, Jim May will be in town. He is going to be doing the storytelling presentation next Sunday, February 10th, at the fundraiser for Speak Story Series. And that's going to be at the Community Club in Shepherdstown. It begins at 7. Doors will open at 6:45. And from 7 to 8:30-ish, depending on questions and answers after the storytelling. And there will also be a silent auction and some real nice objects. Some art and other things are being offered. And on Saturday, Jim May will be doing a storytelling workshop at in Sharpsburg, just 4 miles away from Shepherdstown. And he'll be doing the workshop at my home. And anyone who might be interested in the workshop, it'll be from 1 in the afternoon until 5. And there will be some food, some small repast. And also, since I live next door to Nutter's Ice Cream Store, people may want to take a little break and run over and get an ice cream cone.
Ooh.
I know. That's how I tell people they can find my house. Just look for the most popular business in town, Nutter's Ice Cream, and I live right next door. And anyway, you could call me at 501-253-4656 for any details, information about the cost of the workshop and any other questions you might have. We do not know the Speak Story series lineup yet, but we will find that out on Sunday evening when Adam Booth reveals the storytellers for each month starting in March.
I am so excited.
Yes, me too.
Okay. Thank you, Stosh.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm going to tell a story on the theme of stories not told by the hero called Caperucita Roja. You may know this story as Little Red Riding Hood, but I'm going to tell it in Spanish. And I have a reason for doing that, which we can talk about later if anybody cares about my purposes or my reasons. Okay. Caperucita Roja. En una casa situada en un bosque, vive una niña con su madre y su padre. La niña se llama Caperucita Roja. Al otro lado del bosque vive su abuela. Un día, la madre llama a la niña, ¡Caperucita Roja! ¡Caperucita Roja! ¿Sí, mamá? Caperucita Roja, tu abuela está enferma. Toma esta cesta, es comida. Pero, cuidado, hay un lobo en el bosque. Bueno, mamá. Y la niña corre al bosque con la cesta. En el bosque, el lobo está sentado al lado del camino. El lobo dice, tengo hambre. Cuando el lobo ve a la niña, el lobo dice, buenos días, niña. ¿A dónde va? Voy a la casa de mi abuela con esta cesta de comida, dice la niña. Ah, dice el lobo, ¿está enferma la abuela? Sí, dice la niña. ¿Dónde vive la abuela? Dice el lobo. Mi abuela vive al otro lado del bosque, dice la niña. Ah, sí, dice el lobo. Buenos días, niña. Y la niña va por el camino. El lobo corre por el bosque a la casa de la abuela. El lobo llama a la puerta de la casa. ¿Quién llama? Dice la abuela. Soy yo. Soy Caperucita Roja. Tengo una cesta de comida, dice el lobo. Entra, dice la abuela. El lobo entra en la casa. La abuela está acostada en la cama. El lobo dice, tengo hambre. ¡Ay! ¡Ay! dice la abuela. Tengo mucho miedo. Usted es el lobo. Y la abuela corre por el bosque. El lobo se acuesta en la cama de la abuela. Caperucita Roja va a la casa y llama a la puerta. Abuela, dice Caperucita Roja. ¿Quién llama? Dice el lobo en la voz de la abuela. Soy yo. Soy Caperucita Roja, dice la niña. Tengo una cesta de comida. Entra, dice el lobo en la voz de la abuela. La niña entra en la casa y el lobo se cubre con la ropa de la cama. Buenos días. Oh, buenos días, Caperucita Roja, dice el lobo. Aquí está la cesta de comida. Muchas gracias, Caperucita Roja. Ay, abuela, dice la niña, está usted muy enferma. Sí, niña, dice el lobo. Abuela, ¿por qué tiene usted los ojos tan grandes? Para ver a mi niña, dice el lobo. Abuela, ¿por qué tiene usted las orejas tan grandes? Para oír a mi niña, dice el lobo. Abuela, ¿por qué tiene usted los dientes tan enormes? Para comer a mi niña, dice el lobo. ¡Ay, ay! Dice la niña. ¡Usted es el lobo! ¡Tengo mucho miedo! ¡Socorro, socorro! En ese momento, la abuela vuelve del bosque con el padre y su perro. ¡Socorro! Dice Caperucita Roja. El padre entra en la casa con su perro. ¡Socorro! Dice el lobo. ¡Es un perro! ¡Socorro! El lobo corre por el bosque y nunca, nunca, nunca vuelve a la casa de la abuela.
That was wonderful.
Did you understand a word I said? You have the sneezles.
Yeah, I do. I don't know what happened.
Maybe you're allergic to wolves.
I might be. Definitely I would be. Because I knew what the story was.
You could figure it out.
I was listening, and some things I could get. But I don't know Spanish at all. I was going to commend you on your pronunciation.
Well, actually, my pronunciation is not that good, except for my R's.
Well, to me, you sounded like a person who speaks Spanish.
Yeah, that's because you don't speak Spanish.
Oh, excuse me.
Wow. We need to tell a story about sneezles.
Oh, yeah. Usually, if I lie, I start sneezing.
Ah.
As a kid, I was always afraid of that.
Did your mother know that?
My mother assumed that I wasn't telling the truth most times.
But she didn't know specifically about the sneezles.
No. She would just tell me to cover my face and get a handkerchief. You have plenty of handkerchiefs in your drawer upstairs. Go to your bedroom and get a handkerchief.
Which gave you time to think up a better lie.
Right. Or get busy doing something else and forget all about it. So,
okay.
I often carry a handkerchief and it stays clean until I put my jeans into the wash. And then I realize, oh, there's a nice folded handkerchief that I never use.
Handkerchiefs, that's another story theme. I think I have a couple nice handkerchief stories.
Really?
I love handkerchiefs too. Okay. So that's my Caperucita Roja story. And the reason I wanted to tell that story is because storyteller Laura First and I, well, you have heard us play around with Little Red Riding Hood story,
yes,
in Kevin Cordy's workshop, right, close to a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been playing with that story ever since. And we're thinking about doing it in tandem or somehow collaborating. So I'm thinking of all the different ways to tell the story of Red Riding Hood. And I'm also thinking about telling the story from the wolf's perspective. So in this Spanish language version of Little Red Riding Hood, either the dog or the father are the heroes. And they certainly are not narrating the story. They're not privy to what happens at the beginning of the story, and they don't even really know what happens at the end. But it's interesting to me how stories change depending on who's telling them.
And how close is that to the traditional story?
The only difference in this version that strikes me from the traditional version is that there's no woodcutter in the story.
Right.
So the father, Little Red Riding Hood's father, comes in with the grandmother. So the grandmother bolts for the woods when the wolf... Oh, and the grandmother doesn't get eaten. That's another difference.
Oh.
She just escapes, and she escapes and goes and finds the father, her son, I assume, and brings him back with their dog. And the dog scares the wolf away, and the wolf is never, nunca returns to la casa de la abuela.
So in this version, no one gets hurt.
That's right.
They get scared, but not hurt.
This is a very whitewashed children's version story.
But that's... I like that.
Yeah, safe to tell this to a room full of 3-year-olds without getting in too much trouble.
I can't imagine telling that story to 3-year-olds especially, but, you know, really young children, like preschool or kindergarten children, and talk about cutting the wolf open by the woodcutter.
And the grandmother.
Grandma pops right out. There you go. It's like... brings up all kind of medical questions about how did he get down that skinny grandma's throat, and you know, I mean, how did she get down the wolf's throat?
Yeah,
because they're not really wide enough for.
Well, and in this story, the wolf is not so much bad as hungry. He says over and over again, "Tengo hambre," and if he hadn't been so desperately hungry, perhaps he would not have planned to eat the grandma.
Right.
Or the little girl.
When I first heard that story, my questions were things like, wow, he didn't even take her clothes off to eat her. That's terrible. Imagine eating a chicken with a
nightgown on.
Or a nightgown or something like that. You know, it's like you had to kind of stretch my 7 or 8 year old mind. And that was never a good thing, especially I think the first time I heard this was in school, believe it or not, read by a Catholic nun, you know.
And was there a moral to the story?
There were a lot of questions, mostly from boys who followed up. My question was, I was the first one to ask a question in that class, and my question was about the clothes, you know.
What did the nun say?
The nun said, "It's a fairy tale, and you're not supposed to be thinking about that. It's about what happened." I said, "Well, you know, I can't help what I think." And that's true. One of the things that has always gotten me in trouble at school, not even when I was in college and graduate school, was that I can't help what happens in my mind. Somebody says something, and in my mind, there's a response without me planning it.
And it has to come out.
Mostly.
It's not that it pops into your mind, yes. It's that it comes out.
It usually comes out.
Yes.
But the older I get, the more I think about it.
Before it comes out.
Before it comes out.
It still comes out. Yes. As long as we're clear about that.
You know me well.
And that's why you're such a wonderful storyteller, because stories take root in your mind every 5 minutes.
Right. I can't help it.
Well,
I wouldn't want to.
I know. I know. And I don't want you to change either. I love your stories. Well, the only other thing I wanted to say about Caperucita Roja and Little Red Riding Hood was that Laura and I, as we were playing with this story in Kevin Cordy's workshop, we started, Kevin's instructions to us were to think about what we smelled and saw and felt around us. Yeah. And what was clear to both of us was that that wolf was stinky. And so little Red knew the wolf was there before she saw him. She knew something was there because she could smell him. Mm-hmm. And that got us thinking in terms of visceral fear. And somehow that led to spin-offs on the Me Too movement, and this wolf became very threatening in many ways. And that's as far as we got in that workshop with Kevin. But since then, we've been playing with other options. But I thought it would be fun to do it in Spanish, in my fractured Spanish, anyway.
Well, your pronunciation was good, I think.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate your vote of confidence. Now I'll have to try it in front of an actual Spanish speaker and see if they agree with you, because I doubt they will. All right. So
we are broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. This is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour with
Fanny Crawford
and Stasia Olkowski, co-hosts for this hour.
Thank you for joining us.
Yes.
Our theme today is stories not told by the hero. And what? I guess I can mention Stories in the Round.
I think you should.
Okay. I will mention Stories in the Round, the storytelling venue in Hagerstown at the Unitarian Universalist Church at 13245 Sear Foss Pike. The season starts back up in March. And we have a few tellers lined up for the series. We don't have everybody on board yet. We have Elaine Dull Murray and Andy Offit Irwin and Janice Curtis Green. And that's as far as we know we have confirmations for. And I do not have the confirmation yet for March, so I can't announce that one. But if you want more information, and actually I do have to have at least the first part of the series ready for announcement in less than a week, because there are newsletters that are going out. Other organizations are sending out newsletters and asking me for the lineup. So I'm pressing our tellers hard to get their confirmations. And so maybe by next week I will have most of a full lineup ready. But if you want more information or want to nag me about the lineup, you can call me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638 or email me at Fanitsky, Fanitsky, at hotmail.com. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
Okay. I'm glad that you're so positive your refusal to talk anymore.
So, is it time for another story?
Yes, and this is one of the reasons I like working with you and doing this show, is because we can take chances on things, stories, and I have a story that I've been working on that I'm hoping to submit actually to Kevin Cordy, who is gathering some stories about social justice. And he sent me an email and asked me if I would consider submitting a story. I've been around a long time and taught school for many years. And so I decided to do a story about the Martin Luther King celebration and something that happened in my life before Martin Luther King Day was an official holiday. And in going over this yesterday, I realized that it didn't kind of fit the theme of today exactly, because I had written the story, and it's still in a rough form, but I had written the story from my point of view as a teacher and a coach in the school where I was working. But today I'm going to try to do this from the point of view of some... I hate using the words because I don't know if they're the correct ones just right at the time, but the original intent when I wrote this story down, which is a true story, was just what I remembered and from me. And I decided that I'm going to try to tell this story from the point of view of some students who were not African American without changing the basic facts and details of the story. So here we go. Before there was a national holiday to celebrate the life of Dr. Martin Luther King, there were some cities and a few states that did have a day of remembrance for his life. I was a high school chemistry teacher and a track coach at a public high school in Maryland when this occasion, when this happening came up. And I would like to have one of the students from my chemistry class, who also ran track for me, tell the story. John, have you heard what the black kids are going to do on Monday? And John replied to his friend, Andrew, "Yes, I've heard it, and I think it's crazy. Why do they get to take a day off just because Martin Luther King was some kind of hero to them? Should we take off if, you know, when, I don't know, Vasco da Gama Day, if we were Spanish or Portuguese or something?" And, well, I don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's that simple. Here's what I heard. I heard that there were a number of kids in school, African Americans, who were going to take off Monday, and in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King. But they weren't going to do anything worthwhile. What do you mean by that? Well, what I mean by that is they were just going to take the day off because they feel like they should have a holiday in his honor and they don't have to do anything except take the day off. And I talked to a number of the students. And anyway, I came to talk to you because the coach told me that he wanted to have a meeting in his classroom at the end of the day, and he promised it would only be 5-10 minutes at most, that he would set his clock, and at 10 minutes, if he hadn't finished talking or we hadn't finished talking or whoever wanted to say something hadn't finished, his alarm would go off, and then we would just leave because he didn't want to make this something like a, you know, a diatribe or some kind of preaching. Now, there was a school policy at this time, and Andrew reminded his friend, you know what's going to happen. If they take the day, if the African American students, Andrew was surprised that he remembered to correct himself and not refer to a group of people as they, because he was told in an English class that it was demeaning to just be that disrespectful instead of actually talk about the people with something that says, words that say something about who they are. Well, if the African-American students take off and miss school, they could be suspended Of course, some students can do that and get away with it because their parents will write a note saying they were sick and that. But if they get suspended, it's a 2-day suspension. And they can't make up any work from those days. And if there's a quiz on that day or a test or an oral presentation for a grade, they would get a 0 for that. Okay, well, the meeting took place in the chemistry room at the end of Thursday. The first thing that happened at the meeting, it took a little while to get everybody settled down. There were both African-American students and white students attending this meeting. There were two separate groups. It's the first time in a while that the teacher had seen people sitting in his classroom and actually had separated into two groups. One group was the white students, one group of African-American students. And African-American students were saying things like, if he knows we're going to do this, is he going to turn us in? What about the members of the track team? Are they going to get punished if they take the day off? And no matter what he says, it's not going to change my mind. Finally, one of the girls said, my mother will give me a note and says I was sick. On the other side of the room, actually, they weren't separated by any great distance, just an aisle between seats. Some of the white students were saying things like, why do they get to do this? Why can you be, if you're African-American, just because of Martin Luther King, you can take a day off of school and all this stuff. And before it got out of hand, the teacher spoke and said, what are you going to do on this day off that you're going to take to honor the memory of Dr. King? There were a number of spontaneous comments made to the other students, which actually were kind of ignoring the intent of the teacher's question. I'll be at the mall. I'm going to sleep in and do my nails at my leisure. My girlfriend and I are going to take a trip to Baltimore to visit the Inner Harbor. And there were a number of comments about that. The teacher spoke up and said, well, that's all very interesting, but what are you going to do to honor Dr. King's memory and the work he did? He became very quiet in the room. And he proceeded to tell a little bit about his history. Just a few words, he said, that he wanted us all to think about. And when he was finished, the meeting would be over. He related to us that he had never attended school with a child of color, not in elementary school, high school, or college, because it was against the rules. That caused a quiet in the room. He also told us that the year he got married in the county he lived in, if his future wife had been African American, he could not have obtained a marriage license because, believe it or not, in the 60s, in the county he resided in, it was against the law for a black person, or African American, and a white person to be married, which is kind of hard to understand now. But anyway, he also said if it had not been for the work that Dr. Martin Luther King did and other men and women like him, he would not have had the chance to teach or coach any of the African Americans in that room. And his life would have been poorer for that. He reminded everyone in the room how much better life was for the African American students, not perfect, but better than their grandparents ever had. And that Dr. King had wanted equality and fairness and justice for all people, not just for black people. So his last statement was, how will you honor Dr. King on that day off? He thanked us for being there, and the meeting was over. Andy and I learned the following week that on Monday, 12 of the 14 African-American students who were in that classroom, in that meeting, did attend school. And those that were on the track team attended school and went to track practice. And it seemed to us that Dr. King would have said they honored his memory by taking advantage of some of the things that he helped to change with his work. And that's my story.
Very interesting. Oh, I like this. I think Kevin will like it too.
I hope so. I wanted to contribute a true story. And that is exactly, maybe not word for word, but what happened. And I really have always felt good about that because I didn't, I was the teacher, of course, and I didn't preach to the kids or anything, but I was sincere about my statements about how I felt that even though I had a good education in elementary, high school, and college, and graduate school, it was amazing to me that I knew nothing about African-American life or just had no connection with African-American students, and I couldn't possibly understand what their life was like because of that.
And you grew up in Baltimore.
And I grew up in Baltimore and had very little connection with any African-American students. In fact, when I think back about my childhood, I was kind of sheltered from any kind of problems because my neighborhood was all white, and occasionally I would see a black person or African American person. In fact, when I was a kid, we referred to people of color as colored. Mm-hmm. I don't ever remember having an interaction with people of color except for when I would go to my high school girlfriend's house. She lived about 3 miles from where I did in the city. And she actually lived right at a place where white families and black families kind of met.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to walk through a couple of blocks of where there were stores that were run by African Americans,
mm-hmm.
and I never had one problem or trouble. In fact, when my brother found out, my older brother, 3 years older, found out that I was walking through those streets, he cautioned me and almost forbid me, as if I would listen to him, to go that way. But I never had any trouble at all. I would see teenagers on the street and say hello. And I do remember sometimes I got funny looks because I've always done that. I say hello to people whenever I pass them in the street, especially if I don't know them. And I never felt threatened. And I just... I was in a, I guess I was in a kind of a bubble in my brain, because I did not ever experience any kind of turmoil or problem or trouble because of being a white person in an African-American neighborhood.
Did you have any trepidation the first time? Or?
Well, I think the only time, the first time I walked that way, I actually told Jane I was going to bring some sodas with me. Her mother didn't keep sodas in the house, and her mother was at work, and I was going to go up, and was right after school. It wasn't soccer season, and so I didn't want to carry sodas for 3 miles, and I knew there was a store someplace in there. I went into the store, and there were only African American people in the store. It was kind of like a small A&P store, grocery store, and.
We had one of those in my neighborhood.
Yeah,
and small A&P.
When I walked in, I did notice that everybody was looking at me, but no one said anything negative. And I took a couple of sodas out of the cooler and went up to the counter and paid for it and walked out. And you know, there was nothing. And I remember thinking, wow, I wonder why Tony says stuff like about don't go in this neighborhood or don't do that and don't go near these places because of the African-American people. And I never had any problem. And, you know, it wasn't until I went into the Army that I started to see, have my eyes opened a bit about just what a real big problem it was in our society. Not for me, but for the African-American people.
When you're telling this story, and I understand it's brand new, and you probably haven't told it out loud before.
Never.
Okay. No. Are you thinking of a particular child or a couple of kids when you tell the story?
Yes. Yes. Most of the there were a number of wonderful, wonderful young people who ran track for me. When I first started coaching, I was in a school that had a small percentage of African-American students. I was in an area, in a neighborhood, where a local African-American minister had been known, I found out that this was a fact from an African-American family, that the minister actually preached about not doing things for the white man. I don't know his motivation, but I'm sure that he had experienced some bad things. But he suggested to the students who were in that high school, in that area, that they shouldn't participate in sports because the white coaches just wanted to use them because they were athletes and not help them in any other way, that it was a selfish thing. And that really struck me as something that shouldn't be done, and I certainly wasn't going to go to his church and talk to him about it. I'd started public school teaching in my fourth year of my career, and I had been in a private school. Again, I was teaching in a private school where there were only a few African Americans, and I made it a point to try to get as many black or as many African-American students to come out for my track team. And I was successful because I have been a pretty good salesman all my life about things, and I'm not afraid to talk to people. And, I used what skills I had. I often made jokes to people about things and something that I did find out that about working with African American students was that there is no difference in people about humor and about the way they relate, as long as they don't wear their color as a shield. And that goes for both black and white. In my first year of teaching at that school, I taught ninth grade science. And then in the second semester, I also taught a math class, and it was remedial math. That was the actual name of the class. I was very shocked at it, at the title. But and I had a number of students there who were...
This was in public school?
Public school. Juniors and even a couple of seniors who struggled in math. And I think a guidance counselor at the school had suggested that a remedial math class would be good for them. You know, and so I was interviewed by the principal about this, and he asked me what I would do with remedial math. And I said, I told him I would teach one thing a day, and they would have homework every day on that one thing. But that would be the only way. I wouldn't do something that was difficult and required 3 days of, you know, talking and working to get the concept going. And so he approved that I would do this. At the end of the first quarter, when the marks came out, whenever I taught in any school, I never assigned seats. I always thought that was a good gimmick. Sit wherever you are. If it's a problem, we'll talk about it later, but I don't care. Naturally, I said, I'd want to sit next to the nice-looking girl or, you know, my friend or something, so sit wherever you want. And in this remedial math class, there were seven African-American boys, a few African-American girls, and the rest of the class were white students. Well, Whenever I taught, I would give out the grades before they got report cards. My grades had to be turned in, and a lot of teachers didn't like doing that because they didn't want to hear backlash. So I passed out the grades. And the first grade I gave to the first African-American boy in the row, and these seven young men sat in two rows right next to each other. And after I gave out the papers with grades on them, they were folded so they could keep it to themselves. A tall young man in the first seat was being grumpy. And I said, what's wrong? He said, you gave me a D because I'm black. And I wish I could say I had prepared this or not, but I've often been good with, you know, remarks. And I looked right at him. And now picture this. Sidney Poitier at 6'4". This kid was a basketball star and very good looking. And I walked over and looked at him and I said, I didn't give you a D because you're black. I gave you a D because you're ugly. And for my good feelings, his six other friends roared. The class was no good for 4 or 5 minutes. They actually, some of them repeated that. You got a D because you're ugly. And of course, he wasn't ugly. He was really good looking, you know. And at the end of all the ruckus, he said, I know I deserved a D. And never spoke about it again.
Wow.
And it was, to me, it was like, whoa, that was good, you know. Because I didn't think I'm going to say something to this black student and, you know, if he had been white, I would have done the same thing.
Did you know that his friends would think it was funny?
No. I just knew that it was the complete opposite of what could possibly be true. There's no way anybody considered him ugly, you know? Now, after the fact, when I told this to a colleague of mine.
From the school?
From the school, a good friend, he said, you got away with a bad thing.
That's what I was thinking.
I said, what do you mean? He said, saying to a black person that they're ugly is a way of putting them down.
Yeah.
You know, even if they're good looking, mm-hmm. because of their skin color. And I said, well, never thought of that because I don't think that way.
Well, you know? And the kids apparently knew how you think.
Well, they had had me in class for, what, 6 or 7 weeks. And, you know, I often did things in class to, you know, for fun and things like that and say, you know, when in every class that year, in every class, this is one of the great crazy things some public school administrator had us do. We were asked to do a census of each class of how many African-American students and how many white students we had. And in the paperwork that went with the census, the directions were to please to ask the students of African-American descent to stand up and count them and then just put that number down, and then you knew how many white students you had because you knew how many were in the class.
So the assumption was that you might not recognize every child who was of African-American descent, and that you and the administration was prepared to have the kids self-identify.
Yes.
That's big for that time.
It was. And I understood that later. And I said, but I didn't do it that way. I asked if all the kids who were considered to be white would stand up.
And
they did.
And were there any surprises for you?
No. There were none. And my first thought of this, because they handed it out in our mailbox in the morning, and here we're supposed to do it. I'm going to my first period class in a few minutes. And my first thought was to ask someone to stand up who was African-American. Was, I don't know, it's just some
mean.
It felt like, you know, pointing them out for some reason that is stupid.
Or would immediately raise questions.
Right.
The thing is, though, the same questions would be raised for the white kids, but you were more comfortable with their response or with having them brush it off.
Right.
They wouldn't have necessarily gone home and told their parents about it.
Right.
Whereas the black kids probably would.
And my feeling was that it could have been misunderstood.
Yeah.
That, you know, and so, and probably just a few years later, because I started to get to know things, I would not have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I would have lost the survey. Or I would have thrown it away, probably,
mm-hmm.
Because I knew for a fact that every child who was registered in the public school system in that county had to fill out, the parents, when they registered a child, had to fill out paperwork and had to fill out that question.
Mm-hmm.
And there was quite a discussion at our next faculty meeting about that. There were some teachers, the older teachers, who threw the thing away,
mm-hmm.
and just said, I didn't get one in my mailbox or something like that, because they understood, they had the same kind of feeling. And, mm-hmm. you know, I thought it was a very poor thing to do.
Well, okay, so here, do you remember my question about did you have a particular child student in mind when you developed that story? What I want to know in that story is I want to hear more about the thoughts or conversations of those kids that you had in mind, both, I mean, African-Americans too, but you introduced the story as being from a white child's perspective.
Right.
So I wanted to hear more about those conversations, both before the coach talks,
right,
and after the coach talks. Like, I wanted to hear their internal arguments with the coach before they're convinced, before he wins them over.
Right.
That would make it more for me about the kids rather than the message.
Right.
I guess.
And, well, as I said at the beginning, and not being defensive, but it's true, this is a first draft.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the draft is not written the way I told it at all. I only glanced at it a couple of times because I was doing it from memory and trying to think about Andrew and the other kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky as a teacher that I had the chance to teach for a couple of years without having to take all the courses that tell you what you're supposed to do as a teacher. And then I got my teaching, I never did student teaching because I started teaching in a Catholic high school,
mm-hmm,
and I taught for 3 years. Then, and I got my master's degree, and the student teaching was waived,
mm-hmm,
you know. I happened to be assigned to take the class in student teaching, and a teacher talked to me at the beginning when I went in and said, "You don't need this class.
You've been in the classroom. And I don't want to be your lead teacher."
I said, I don't want to bother with you in the class. You're going to correct everything I say." You know, and so I actually got credit for the student teaching class because of he wrote a letter,
mm-hmm,
and I got 3 credits. For that class, which was great, because
yeah.
I didn't want to have somebody tell me how I should teach.
Okay. So, I'd like to suggest that next week we will be telling some version of love potions, spells,
ooh,
and...
Cool.
Broken hearts. I don't know.
Boy, I could fill up a year.
I know. Well, I figured we would both have stories that we'd like to share for Valentine's Day and honor Saint Valentine.
He's not a saint.
Well,
they threw him out
anymore. Yeah. Yes, in some people.
Isn't that amazing?
The saint of love. Yes. Okay. This is your co-hosts, Fanny Crawford and...
Stasz Olkowski.
Thanking you for joining us today at the Enlighten Storytelling Hour on enlightenradio.org, broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia. And we hope you join us next Monday at 12 noon. In the meantime, you should go to talltales.enlightenradio.org. Stasz is coaching me because it's been so long since I've said that. I couldn't remember the handle. Okay, so you can listen to our shows from the past 2.5 years, I believe. The Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional storytellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for
poetry.
The poetry show, or poetry in general, on enlightenradio.org. See you next time.
I'll be here.
Me too.